Aloha. Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns over the air and online. Now, here's your host, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha. Good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. We're here every Sunday, 6:30 a.m. on Koa Country 107.7 FM and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM with big mahalos to our sponsor, Hawaiian Ukulele and Guitar at Queen's Shops and on Ali'i Drive, right across from Hulehe'i Palace. The podcasts of Island Issues are online for anytime listening at lava1053.com and at koacountry1077.com. Imagine this. You're in a movie theater, or on the mainland at a mall, or in an airport, and suddenly somebody pulls out a gun and starts shooting. Do you know what to do? That's one of the things we will talk about this morning. What you should know should you ever find yourself in that terrible situation. The FBI has looked at active shooter incidents in the United States, not shootings from gang violence or people using guns in robberies or things like that, but incidents where an individual actively engages in killing or attempting to kill people in a confined and populated area. The FBI goes on to say that these generally use firearms as the weapon of choice. Between 2000 and 2015, a period of 16 years, the FBI found there were 200 active shooter incidents in the United States, with the annual occurrences climbing to 20 active shooter incidents in this country in each of 2014 and 2015, the highest number ever. These incidents had more than 1,200 casualties. These are people wounded or killed, but not counting the shooters. The numbers do not include 2016, including the fairly recent Orlando nightclub shooting, which was the worst mass shooting in United States history and left 49 dead and 50 wounded. Back in 2014, we spoke with Hawaii County Police Lieutenant Thomas Chopé about the capabilities of Hawaii County Special Response Team, our name for what many would call a SWAT team, and we talked with him about what to do if we are where somebody does start shooting. Lieutenant Chopé is my guest again today to remind us how to react if we are placed in such a situation, and we'll talk about the readiness of our Hawaii County Police Department to handle such a situation. Good morning. Aloha, Lieutenant Chopé.
Aloha. Good morning.
Lieutenant Chopé, I'd like to talk first about what we should do if we're actually caught in an active shooter situation. And I know that back in 2014, you and your colleagues conducted what I would call active shooter workshops or preparation workshops around the island in the various districts, and you're undertaking that same thing now, doing this in every district on the island, telling us how to respond if we're caught in that situation. So before I ask you what we should do, does Hawaii County Police Department have an inkling that we are going to have an active shooter incident? Do you have any credible threats that you know of?
At this time, no, there are no credible threats, but we look at it as an approach of better preparing our community should something like this happen. So our community, our visitors, and our residents have the ability to make good decisions should they find themselves caught in this unfortunate situation.
Well, one of the things, Lieutenant Chopé, that I was struck by as I read the FBI reports was that 60% of the active shooter incidents that occurred between 2000 and 2014 actually ended before police arrived. And the FBI was able to determine that in a good number of those, the actual incident only lasted between 2 and 5 minutes. It was actually over fairly quickly, but that didn't make them any less deadly. So it seems like the FBI and their advice to ensure that citizens are prepared, because they do have that in their documentation, that we as citizens should know what to do. It's like they're telling us, you know, we do need to know how to protect ourselves. So, Lieutenant Chopé, if we are in a public place and somebody starts shooting, what should we do?
So I would go backwards a little bit and kind of have a general preparedness for ourselves. We look at fire drills. We know in schools and organizations we do fire drills on a regular basis, yet that is not something where we see large fires having huge amounts of casualties. But for active shooters, we tend to not prepare ourselves prior to these events, but rather look at it after, like what we can do better or what we should have done better. So for us moving forward, we would suggest having a general situational awareness prior to any type of event happening, which is knowing where you are, taking notice of individuals around you that may or may not look like they fit that location or that place, knowing where your exits are. Those are the important things. So if something bad happens, you have an advantage over that shooter in that area to be able to get yourself away from that. That leads into your first best option would be to run or to get away. So if you can get away from this active shooter in a timely manner, that is going to very highly increase your survivability. And that's what we're looking for.
Well, so I'm guessing also that if I were in a public place and I heard shooting and I could see that that's what was going on, I should leave all my personal possessions. If I'm in an airport, for example, I should not try to drag my luggage with me, yeah?
And that's a great point. We usually do see left behind is personal belongings. And we would recommend that because upon an evacuation, initially, the first responding officers aren't going to know who for sure that shooter is. And the more things and possessions you have with you, we have to kind of make sure that there's nothing in there that can harm anyone else if you're brought to an evacuation area. The one item that we do recommend, but say early on is a bad thing, is a cell phone. A lot of people carry a cell phone in a bag or in a purse. But during an active shooter, if you leave that bag or purse, you're kind of distance away from potentially a lifeline that you may have. So that would be something, if you do carry a cell phone on a regular basis, which most people do, would be to always try and have that on your person.
Okay, like not, in my pocket, not
yes,
in my
not
purse.
Not in your hand, not in a purse,
okay,
but in a pocket or somewhere tucked on you. So once you get out, or if you're trapped somewhere, you can call for help. And later on, we can talk about how a cell phone will immensely help get the situation under control.
Oh, good. Okay, so the first thing is I run. What if I'm, and actually I want to go back, when I used to travel a lot on business, you know, they would always say, when you go to the hotel, always check for the fire exits to make sure you know what to do if there is a fire. And I used to do that routinely. And so when you talk about just general preparedness, really it is something that we do in our life, but you're right, for active shooters we haven't. So this is good advice. So first thing is run. What if for some reason my exit is blocked or I cannot run or I don't know where the shooter is or I think he might be between me and the exit? What do I do then?
And you bring up a very good point. So a run on that runner to get away is only if you can identify where that shooter is and you can run in a direction away from them. If you're not able to determine where that shooter is, running would not be your best option because you may inadvertently put yourself into a danger area as you run out, especially because a lot of these active shooter events happen in an enclosed area or indoor, and sound doesn't appear to be coming from exactly where it is. So if we can't determine where the shooter is, our next best option would be to hide. But it's not just hiding under a desk or closing our eyes hoping it goes away. It's barricading ourselves, making it very hard for someone to get to us with the assumption that, again, as you mentioned earlier, these events are over in a relatively short amount of time, and a shooter also knows that, so they're not going to spend a lot of time trying to get to your location if you're very well barricaded. So that would be your next best option after the run is your hiding or your barricading.
And interestingly, if we look back at Orlando at the nightclub shooting, although that event did last a little bit longer than the normal, a lot of the people who were saved were barricaded in a bathroom.
The Orlando shooting, it is a slightly different aspect for not just an active shooter. It started as an active shooter event, which these principles would apply, but then it evolved into a hostage-taking event, which is a very different police response from an active shooter response.
And that's a good point. And I do want to ask you about typical police response. So when you talk about hiding, give me some specifics about what you're talking about in barricading myself. How do I do that?
Usually good places to barricade or hide if you have to for several different reasons is a restroom, if you're able to find a restroom. One of the reason being is that there's usually tile about 3/4 up the wall. You can sometimes lock a door or barricade a door with either a belt or something like that to tie it closed. And if you happen to be in that area for a long time prior to evacuations, you have access to water and restroom facilities. Otherwise, any area that you can find, if you can kind of hide yourself behind objects, is the best thing. What you're trying to do is make it hard for the shooter to get to you, number one. And then second of all, if they were to fire or inadvertently fire a round through a wall or through an object where you are, you want to have that bullet contacting as many things prior to it contacting you to slow it down and basically act as a shield between where you are and where that shooter is.
So even things in an airport, for example, like my suitcase, if I had it, my carry-on luggage, just use everything I have at my disposal to make myself a little fort.
Yes. We also tell people that, understandably, these situations are very chaotic and some people aren't prepared for this, are not able to stay calm. So we'll tell them if they have available phone books, newspapers, magazines, a small suitcase or thing like that, if they're hidden, give it to them to hold on to hug. It's a calming motion to do. It kind of slows down your breathing. Plus, by doing that, you're adding that little bit of ballistic protection, your poor man's bulletproof vest, to your vital areas. So it's another thing. It's during these incidences, there is a lot of improvisation of what you have available to get you through it.
You know, and people tend to be rather possessive of their possessions. But in this kind of situation, everything you have around you should be considered a tool for your use, because you can always replace a suitcase or clothing or whatever. You can replace your computer. You can replace a lot of things, but you can't replace your life or the lives of others.
That's a very good point. Use what you have. Use it as a tool. Don't look at it as a possession. The reason being is that you can have all the possessions in the world, but if you don't make it through that active shooter situation, they're completely useless to you. So the main point is for you to get through it and get through it alive. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones to make it through that, not to the shooter.
Okay, so first choice, run. Second choice, hide. There's a third option.
Your last option, and it is a last option, is to fight. This is if you are encountered directly by the shooter, you didn't have an opportunity to run away, you didn't have an opportunity to barricade or hide, and as you are about to make another decision, the shooter presents himself in your direct area. Fighting, you don't have a second chance on this. So we tell people if they're going to do it, commit to their actions. Yell, be aggressive. You're going to try and evoke the startle response in the shooter by you knowing when you yell and it's a surprise for them. Use it to your advantage. Throwing objects, trying to distance yourself from them or distance the weapon from that shooter.
You know, most of us, many of us, now you are an exception, Lieutenant Chopin. This is your job, but it's not my job. And my instinct would be not to fight because that's not what I do. But what you're saying is I have to forget who I am. And as you say, commit myself if I need to fight. And that means use everything at my disposal, right?
Yes. At this point, if you get to this point in an active shooter situation, and it may be out of your character to do something like that. But what we would suggest is, one, prepare for this early so you're mentally are capable of doing it. And don't think of it so much as you doing something out of your character. You're doing something for your loved ones and for your family so you can get home to them after this tragic situation.
Lieutenant Chopin, if the fight scenario becomes the right scenario and people do go after the shooter and they manage to disable him or her, even though there's not very many women who've done this, and they can get the weapon away from the shooter, what's their next best thing to do?
Okay, that's a great question. Once you're able to distance the weapon from the shooter, one of the things that we don't want to do is we don't want to pick that weapon up. Primarily because you might not know how to operate that particular firearm, and the responding officers, when they arrive on scene, again, their best description is going to be a person with a gun. And if they see you standing above someone on the ground holding a firearm or pointing a firearm at them, that could be misinterpreted that you are actually the shooter. So we would want to distance the firearm from the person, secure it somewhere if possible. If you can distance it from them far enough or long enough and you can get away, use that opportunity to get away from that shooter.
And just if you've disabled the shooter, maybe get a whole bunch of people to hold him down.
Yes, if you can and you can overpower them and restrain them some way, then that's another great option you can do.
The police will obviously be called in a situation like this, and I want to ask about the police response. But you mentioned to me, keep your cell phone because it can be a good lifeline. Tell me about the cell phone.
Yes, so a cell phone early on in an active shooter situation, a cell phone is a bad thing because what will happen is the vast majority of people will either get this information out very quickly, and it'll be on the internet, Facebook, Twitter, social media feeds. And if your friends and family, loved ones, happen to know that you're in that area where this event is happening, their natural instinct is going to be to try and get a hold of you to see if you're okay. So if you happen to be hiding or you happen to be running and your phone rings, now that's going to draw that undue attention to your location, and it may happen to draw the shooter to your location. So early on, a cell phone is not really a good thing. We want to make sure that they're either silenced or on vibrate. And not just ours. If people are hiding with us, we want to make sure theirs are, or any phones that may have been left behind in people's bags and things like that. Also for landlines at this time. But why a cell phone is good later on is that will help the situation get under control much, much faster. We've seen in a lot of the incidences after the fact, huge traffic jams. People that are in ambulances ready to get evacuated, but their ambulances are not able to leave because of the severe traffic jam. So with the phone, once you leave, the things we look for is you will call your friends, family, and loved ones, tell them you're okay, you'll be home as soon as you can, and don't come down here. Those three things will help get the situation under control much faster. It'll alleviate traffic areas so the first responders and medical resources have free access and are able to flow. And it will give peace of mind to your friends, family, and loved ones.
And a brief interruption to remind you, this is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. Today we're talking with Lieutenant Thomas Chopay of the Hawaii County Special Response Team. He's telling us how to react if we are ever put in the horrible situation of being where there is an active shooter, somebody who is in a public place and randomly starts shooting. We'll also talk a little bit about the capabilities of his Special Response Team, which is our county's name for the SWAT team. Island Issues airs every Sunday morning, 6:30 a.m. Koa Country, 107.7 FM, and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM, and then is posted as a podcast at lava1053.com and at koacountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. Island Issues is sponsored by Hawaiian Ukulele and Guitar at Queen's Shops and on Ali'i Drive. Uncle Ook owns Hawaiian Ukulele and Guitar. He's gotten to have quite a reputation in the ukulele and guitar business. I recommend you stop in and talk with him just for fun, actually. But also, if you've ever had a thought that you want to play ukulele, he can make sure that you've got the right ukulele for you, which is based on way more than just your size. Anyway, Hawaiian Ukulele and Guitar, Queen Shops, and on Lali'i Drive across from Hulehe'i Palace. Next Sunday morning, join me for a live election return update. The election is Saturday the 13th, and I'll be joined by Karen Stanton of Hawaii247.com and by Dr. Todd Belt of University of Hawaii at Hilo Political Science Department. Now let's get back to Lieutenant Thomas Chopay. When the police arrive on the scene, what do civilians need to know about their interaction with the police, what they should do?
Okay, when officers arrive on the scene, the first thing they're going to be looking for is for that shooter. Unfortunately, historically, when people are encountered by an active shooter, their main focus is they see a weapon. They don't necessarily see the person and get a good description. So our dispatchers are providing information to officers that there is an active shooter event or there's a shooting happening, but very rarely do we get a very clear, good description of who that shooter is. So when the officers get on scene, they're looking for that shooter. And again, if you happen to be out around, you don't want to approach the officer because then they have to try and determine whether you're that shooter or not. If you're away, stay away. If you're hidden, stay hidden. Don't approach the officer, especially trying to think that they're the first ones here, so now you're saved. So kind of wait and stay where you are if you're hidden so that they can do their job and find that shooter before they start the evacuations.
I've also seen, when I've seen active shooter situations on TV, that the people leaving the scene are, in fact, instructed by officers to keep their hands up and visible and to not have things with them. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so the reason, if you do happen to be caught in an area, you weren't able to run, you weren't able to hide, and you're trying to still find your way out of there when officers arrive, the best thing you can do is to keep your hands high and visible. The reason being is that, again, the officer doesn't have a good description of who the shooter may be, and they have to kind of vet every person that comes out. If they can see you have nothing in your hands, that puts them a little bit more at ease. They realize that you're probably trying to get out of that area, and they'll be able to instruct you out. Having a cell phone, again, not in your hand. You want to have it in a pocket or somewhere tucked away on you as you're trying to leave that area.
When police arrive on the scene, most likely there will be wounded people. Will the officers tend to those wounded people?
It's a good question. I think as we learn more and this becomes more common knowledge, that we realize that the people that are injured are not going to be the first priority. The first priority is to stop the active shooting from happening or stop the active violence from happening. So before anyone can be helped, we have to stop the bad things from happening. So the officer's first priority is to stop that active violence from ongoing. Once that's determined to have been stopped, then evacuations can be done and medical staff can come in to help these individuals that may need any type of rescuing.
And I understand that the EMTs, the medical personnel, will not come on scene until the police have secured in some way the active shooter. Is that correct?
Yes. And it brings up a good point that our tactical team is working with the fire department on integration so that where traditionally they would be standing off a little bit. And the reason being is that they're not able to protect themselves if that active shooter is still around. And if one of them gets hurt or injured, then that's how many less people they're able to help. So now what we're moving forward, and we see it nationally, is working with our fire department to, as the situation may be getting, instead of a hot zone, maybe a warm zone, we work with fire, giving them protection, moving them in to help people much faster than waiting until everything is completely confirmed to be a safe zone.
Lieutenant Chopay, last time we spoke, you mentioned that one of the things that police learned starting with Columbine, which was the first big active shooter incident in 1999 when two school kids decided to shoot up their own school, was that after that, police realized their best response was not staying outside and waiting, but rushing in fast. Is that still typically the way the police do things?
Yes, if they can determine that there is still an active ongoing violence. So if they get to a location and they still hear shots fired, and they still hear that there's a high likelihood that more people are now becoming injured or murdered, yes, they're going to push in. If they get to an area where an active shooter may have occurred and it is not actively ongoing, then they will wait till they have a sufficient personnel so they can more strategically move through the area trying to look for this shooter.
Are our police dispatchers, the people who answer those 911 calls, are they trained in how to determine if it really is an active shooter situation?
Yes. So our dispatchers do have protocols for questions that they'll ask upon receiving a call. And for them, what's going to give that cue of that active shooter is the multiple calls coming in from the same location on this. And they realize it would be a standard for any type of weapons-based call. They're looking for how many victims, if they know a location of where the shooter is, if they have a description, if they know who is holding a weapon, whether it's the shooter or someone else, those kind of things.
So, Lieutenant Chopay, in such a situation, obviously 911 dispatches the police, but you are head of the special response team, and I am assuming your team would get called out too. So tell us, what is the special response team with Hawaii County Police?
Okay, the special response team is, as you mentioned earlier, our island's SWAT team. So historically, the tactical teams or the SWAT team or our special response team would get activated for this type of situation. But realistically, by the time we get there, as in all of the situations, the active shooter event is over. There is no more ongoing death or anything like that. But why our involvement is we will methodically search areas for people that may be hidden, those that may need medical assistance, and we have breaching capabilities to be able to get to areas where a shooter may have caused damage or things like that that a normal officer wouldn't be able to get to. We also provide relief for the officers that may have been there for quite some time in helping with the evacuations and the searching for any additional shooters or anything like that.
Lieutenant Chopay, who is on the special response team? What kind of officers are on it? Give us a sense as to what you do.
The special response team is a specialized unit with the police department. It's a voluntary position, except for my position and my sergeant's position. So all the other officers wishing to be on the team have to be a member for at least 5 years, have to be in good standing with the department, have to receive recommendations from their supervisors. There is a physical agility test that they must pass. They have to pass a psychological background, an interview, and then a basic training with our team. Once they're selected to the team, they'll continue with our weekly Friday trainings.
So you train once a week?
Yes, we train once a week. They'll continue with our training, and then we have quarterly physical testing, quarterly firearms testing, and we do quarterly scenario testing with our negotiator groups, and now we're integrating the fire department with that. The officers on the team come from any of the sections in our department around the island. There are a very few exceptions to who would be eligible to be on the team.
Who is your sergeant?
My sergeant is Sergeant Greg Yamada. Both of our positions are based out of Hilo, but he lives on the Hilo side.
And you live on the Kona side?
Yes.
So there's somebody always available. But then the rest of your team has other regular job assignments, so they just get called up when it's necessary.
Yes. So the other team members have collateral duties. They may work in various districts or various divisions in the department. And when we have a call out, it'll be a phone chain. They'll be immediately activated and they'll respond to wherever that call out may be.
It sounds like the members of your team have far more rigorous requirements relative to training and physical fitness than does the average police officer, which is a good thing, I think, to make sure you're physically fit to do it. Clearly is a grueling job.
It is the reason why we do our physical standards, or why our physical standards are so rigorous, is because of the additional equipment our officers have to carry. With their ballistic vest, helmet, the additional gear, they're carrying around about 50 additional pounds of weight with them. If they happen to be a breacher, that is a total of about 110 to 120 pounds of extra gear and equipment they have to carry. So,
and the breacher is like the big battering ram thing that knocks down doors?
Yes, so they'll have that, plus they'll have a breacher kit for in case it's not a standard door or a regular door. So there's a lot of equipment that those individuals have to carry.
Well, I guess it gives me comfort to know that should we have a problem on this island, we're protected.
I try and give them credit where it's due, and it usually is due quite a bit. They go above and beyond, and there is no additional incentive for them to be on the team other than just the pride of serving their community.
Lieutenant Chopay, I know that the Special Response Team has some very specialized weapons, and you have a specialized vehicle. Where's this vehicle come from? What is it?
Yes, we do have a Lenco Bearcat. It is our department's rescue vehicle. It's utilized for our Special Response Team to move our members into areas of harm and to evacuate members of the public that may be in an area of harm where they wouldn't want to run or walk in front of where possibly a shooting could be happening.
Where did it come from? It's a big, heavy, armored vehicle.
So the vehicle, we acquired the vehicle in 2007. We were the first county in the state to acquire it. We got it through a grant. Once we acquired it, all of the other counties came, had a chance to look at it, and everyone followed suit, and now each county has the same type of vehicle.
Where did the grant come from?
Department of Homeland Security.
Oh, nice. Lieutenant Chopay, have we ever actually had an active shooter incident here on Hawaii Island?
No, we have not had any active shooters on this island meeting the federal definition of an active shooter.
Okay, but I know that your team has been called out for situations. I know there was an incident up in Kohala where a man was barricaded in a house and shot a woman that he was with and then shot the arriving police officer. Tell us the kind of situations that you do get called out for.
Other type of incidences that we would get called out for would be, as you'd mentioned, those barricaded type of individuals, armed individuals, a high-risk warrant, dignitary detail or a special protective detail, where we would work with a federal law enforcement agency. We also would do hostage rescue or hostage negotiations in conjunction with our crisis negotiation team, which is always deployed with us on all of our call-outs.
So we have hostage negotiators on the Hawaii County Police Team?
Yes, we do.
Wonderful. You know, sometimes I think people think, well, we're on an island, we probably don't have capability, but we seem to have all the capability that any big city police department would have. But I know there's not backup, meaning Hawaii Police Department is Hawaii Police Department. Should you ever have a situation where that's not enough, what do you do?
That's a great question, because we do live on an island. So within the state, the tactical commanders from each of the islands got together over the last few years, and we formed a state tactical association. We have annual meetings, and it allows us to tap into each other's resources. We earlier in the year had an incident here that was slightly beyond our capabilities, so we had someone to directly reach out to, which was Honolulu SSD, their specialized services division, and they provided assistance with mitigating an explosive device.
Lieutenant Chopay, you, since you started with the Special Response Team leadership in 2008, have had many opportunities to not only work here on this island, but to observe what has happened with active shooter incidents on the mainland. Are there any key learnings you would care to share with us about what you know now that maybe we didn't know back then?
I think one of the main things that we tend to turn a blind eye to is just our situational awareness. We don't want to have these type of events change the way we act as a community or as a state or as a country. We're still going to enjoy large gatherings, large events, but if we can, we want to try and be aware, a little bit more aware in those situations. A lot of times we see people so focused on cell phones or mobile devices that we don't see what's happening around us. And if we kind of look up and pay attention every once in a while, we'll see things that might be out of place or out of order, and then trust your instinct. So if you think something is not right, please act upon it. Notify someone so it can be looked into prior to something bad happening.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because oftentimes in these incidents on the mainland, somebody later will say, well, I thought he was acting weird, or, you know, he said he might do something, but I didn't think he would. So basically what you're saying is the same thing. If you see something, say something, because it's better to do that than regret it.
Yes. And our department does have an option for people. Most people should be familiar with Crime Stoppers. We have a Kuleana hotline, which is basically that it's our community, it's our responsibility. If you see something that you feel is maybe out of place or something that might warrant a little bit further a look, that's what it's there for. And it helps with early interventions. But it may just be putting the pieces of the puzzle together so we can see what that picture is and getting it to the right resources.
Lieutenant Chopay, what is the Kuleana hotline number?
So the Kuleana hotline number is 961-2219. It is not always manned by someone, so you can leave a message on there, and it can be anonymous.
So basically, just if I see something and I'm concerned about it, I let you know. What's that number again?
961-2219.
Lieutenant Chopay, I know you have for many years conducted active shooter briefings and workshops, some for the community, and you have those ongoing now, which is great, and we appreciate it. What about teachers? I know when we saw the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting, it was clear that those teachers, many of them had specialized training, and they knew what to do to protect their children as best they could. Do you conduct special trainings for teachers here?
Yes, we work with a lot of schools on the island. We also work with the Department of Education for administrators to get the same information out more in depth when we do the presentations and to answer their questions and kind of help them look at their unique situations. Every location is a little bit different, and we need to understand that and embrace that. Use what you have available to you to your best advantage. So that's why the benefit of us going and meeting with the schools, the employees, the teachers, to kind of help give them that advantage.
Lieutenant Chopay, clearly people can learn a lot from listening to this program or from going to one of your active shooter presentations, but where else can they get information about this?
So our department has on its website, which is hawaiipolice.com. If you go onto the website, on the top, you'll see the tabs. On the services tab, there'll be a drop-down box. In the drop-down box, it has active shooter violence awareness. In that tab, it'll give you additional resources to the Department of Homeland Security Active Shooter Preparedness website. And there are also three videos posted on there that provide an overall awareness of or give you a view of an active shooter event happening and recommendations on what you should do if you're in that type of situation.
What final comments do you have, Lieutenant Thomas Chopay, about the special response team or active shooter situations that you'd like to share before we say aloha?
Active shooter situations, I hope that this island is never involved in one, but with our continuing presentations and our community outreach and our community having a general interest in it, I hope that if it does happen, we have a very, very good outpouring and a great response so that we don't make it an effective active shooter event.
Lieutenant Thomas Chopay, head of the Special Response Team, thank you so much for sharing all this information with us this morning. Aloha.
Aloha, and thank you for having me.
And thank you so much to our listeners for being with us. This is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. We're here courtesy of Uncle Ook at Hawaiian Ukulele and Guitar at Queen's Chops and on Ali'i Drive. Stop in to see Uncle Ook. He's extremely informative and also quite entertaining. I'll see you next Sunday morning when Karen Stanton of Hawaii247.com and Professor Todd Belt of UH Hilo are scheduled to be my guests to talk about the election returns. Until then, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahoi ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us info@lava1053.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.